Welcome to Season 7, Episode 6 of the Fireman Trainer Podcast, published on April 9th, 2024. This episode, we'll be talking with Brian Hill from The Complete Combatant about his deliberate coaching class that he's teaching this year. If you like our podcast, give us a five-star review. Share it with a friend. Remember when you found our podcast and was excited about listening to it and all the topics we have? Think about passing on to somebody else and suggesting they do it also. Buckle up for another interesting episode to help you as a trainer and instructor. This episode is also brought to you by our friends at the FTA, the Firearm Trainers Association. Visit their website at ftaprotect.com to learn more about their instructor coverage offer and their competitive pricing. All certified instructors, whether you're NRA, USCCA, Rangemaster, are acceptable to the program, or if you're a state certified one. Go to ftaprotect.com. Remember to use promo code FTP10, which is a special 10% discount for listeners of this podcast. This episode is brought to you by the LASR Classic Trainer. I use the LASR Classic system in my classroom because it allows me to teach first-time gun owners proper sight alignment, proper drawing from a holster, and trigger control without stepping on the range, saving me time and the student money by not firing rounds downrange. When the student is ready, they know what to do because of the classroom training. LASR Classic is easy to set up and tear down because all you need is a laptop with a webcam to use it. That allows you to set up anywhere you can take your laptop. The application also works with any laser device, from laser cartridges you put in your firearm to dedicated laser trainers. LASR is veteran-owned and operated. Find out more information at lasrapp.com and receive a special 10% discount by using discount code FTP10 at checkout. We bring this podcast to support the industry, the Second Amendment, and most importantly, every firearm instructor in America that dedicates time and energy into making gun owners more knowledgeable. Today, we're joined by Brian Hill from Complete Combatant. Brian, welcome to the podcast, and thank you for taking time to be on tonight.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Brian, I know we've had your wife on, Shelly, before on different topics, but can you tell us a little bit about what you do and your background in The Complete Combatant?
Sure. I've been a professional coach my entire life, teaching martial arts and other parts of the martial business. From I was a amateur and professional fighter once upon a time, and a professional cornerman. And I have probably one of the largest coaching backgrounds in the industry. I started at 18, and I'm 59, so I've got 41 years of coaching, which is roughly equivalent to about 125,000 hours of actual practice of teaching people in high-stress environments to do things. I had a bit of law enforcement background with the Fulton County Sheriff's Office Reserve, and I have had multiple hats, but the last 10 years has primarily been traveling the country and teaching firearms now, which I find to be a much kinder job than getting punched and beat up. So it's
yeah, you've had a little bit of a risky career up until this point, so I can see where you might enjoy traveling a little bit and teaching versus being in law enforcement and being a professional fighter.
Yeah. But, you know, I got to travel then, but there was always somebody waiting to beat me up.
Yeah. And on a good day, you know, you won and you got beat up. On a bad day, you lost, but still got beat up, right?
Yep. It always sore and tired afterwards and hurt. So,
yeah, unless they just forfeit, you know, hey, I'm not showing up today. It was the only time you walked home feeling the same way you did when you walked in.
That's oddly disappointing too, when somebody can't make weight or they don't make the fight. That's harder to deal with, I think, than anything, all that preparation work.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Getting yourself all psyched up for it and such, and then it's like, oh, I don't get to do anything.
Yep.
Well, that good practice there. Well, that's a good intro to today's topic, because you're doing a class called Deliberate Coaching. And I, like probably most of the instructors and listeners that are listening, have seen this advertised, people talked about on social media and several different places. Can you tell us what is Deliberate Coaching?
Yeah. So the idea with this is, you know, I made a lot of mistakes as a coach, and I was very fortunate to be around some of the greatest instructors in the world, go to the Olympic Training Center, have a deep interest in this, and get roughly 12 hours a day of practice and learn some really tough solutions and how to deal with people. But I also knew that something was really sadly lacking. And we were stuck in martial arts kind of the same way that firearms is now. There's some really good curriculums to teach from, you know, whether you go NRA or USCCA or Rangemaster. But you get to do a lot of curriculum-based instruction. And the problem with coaching people is that's only a third of the process. So the coach really needs to know how to coach people to their highest performance. And we've made a lot of progress in neuroscience, learning how people work, the chemicals they excrete while they're learning. But as an instructor, as a coach, you also have to be in managing their psychological side of it, which is, do they have enough information and time relative to the task? And then the physiological side is, how do they manage stress, which I see the one that was really lacking. The idea with deliberate coaching was not to teach a curriculum driven, although, you know, I do have a curriculum in it, but to teach people how to work with other people and to give them the chance to work with each other 8, 9, 10 times in a 3-day class so they could experiment with some of the processes that I was teaching during the PowerPoint and in their practice. Also, it has an open practice session, so you get to practice it yourself. And so people could gain a little bit of confidence of what yields the best value when you're teaching a student. Because a lot of us, we have developed preferences, and the bias comes from usually in an instructor, whatever worked for me is going to work for everybody. And we know that's not true. People have a wide range of learning styles and biases, and they need a chance to work with somebody and to make these mistakes. And they need the watchful eye of, I don't have a better term for it, but as a master coach to stand over them and help them develop their confidence and help them learn the Socratic method, help them learn to challenge the student in a meaningful way, to set clear goals for them, to help them understand what being present means and mindful, and what a good feedback loop as a coach, so that we don't have to suffer so much. I mean, we're going to suffer in training, don't get me wrong, but you don't have to make it needlessly, because people tend to grind and overtrain or undertrain because the motivation doesn't exist in the right format. And the brain is a very interesting mechanism in that it needs a bit of struggle to ramp up to the process and to get ready. So deliberate coaching is to address that lacking area and to give people a chance that, frankly, I had to learn a lot of these lessons on my own very painfully. And this makes it easier to coach. And I found a wide group of people that are very interested in the modern coaching methodology instead of more the institutional coaching that we're used to, where, you know, we lay the curriculum out, you follow it, and then you either get better or you don't in that moment. And it's very interesting process in this industry because it was much like martial arts was before mixed martial arts came along. We had a lot of preferences and we had a lot of personality, but we weren't teaching from principle and we didn't have a living curriculum that was being stress tested and allowing people to grow like they should.
Interesting. Very interesting. My first kind of question, you said you've done this, you know, for so many years and such, but why are you doing this now?
So, your life changes and mine changed in such a dramatic way. I got COVID early in February of 2020 and I nearly died. Thankfully I had a good doctor told me not to come to the hospital. My wife took care of me, but, my business, my martial arts business was immediately closed. It had nothing to do with the government, just nobody was training. And then I was laying on what could possibly be my deathbed, not to be dramatic, but I had to make a decision. I understand the idea of a sunk cost bias and that I had put love and effort into this, but I was not going to be able to survive this as a business. So I shut my business down and decided that I would teach at our own private range and just spend all the time doing that as a full-time business. And then, of course, the county, as we talked about earlier, gave me a hard time. And this pivoted me to teaching on the road more, which has been incredibly rewarding. And it showed me a place where, as you know, the market tells you what your place is often as an instructor and what your strengths and weaknesses are. And I'm a good shooter. I'm a very good shooter. And there's plenty of good shooters out in the world. But I've always had a passion for teaching people. And sometimes I get miraculous results and people feel like I'm doing things that are, you know, like a Jedi. I get inside their head, or, you know, I'm doing some sort of, you know, body reading or something like that. And it's very strange, but this is what coaches really do. And there's a deep connection in teaching. So my passion is to, you know, leave the industry in better shape than when I entered it by helping people find a pathway to do this.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this just for the experienced instructor coach that's been around for 10 years, or is this for the, you know, beginning instructor who just got certified last month? Who are you targeting with this deliberate coaching course?
You know, and once again, we go to the market. The market's funny about these things. I get people who do not teach that just want to come and explore this process. I get people that are newer on the side and they feel like they're missing something in their lessons and they'd like to get better results. There's a minimum shooting standard in it. And as my wife likes to remind me, I may not be the best judge of what I think minimum shooting skills are since I spend my time shooting so much, but they're not extraordinarily hard. So I get a lot of people in this class that are just simply interested in what martial arts have always offered. And, you know, shooting is the original American martial art, and something that you gain from it that people don't recognize is self-mastery, because you're the only constant in your fight. Whether the fight is on the range, whether the fight is to defend yourself, whether it is to be a better person. And something that martial arts has always truly examined is, how do we get better as people? How do we address the negativity that exists inside of us? How do we overcome biases? How do we get better? So it can be open to anybody. They, you know, you need to be a sufficiently good shooter, say from the holster, be able to shoot some courses of fire. And I made it real easy for everybody. I did videos on all of it so that people can see what's required in that class. But I have had some people that said, hey, I don't think I'm supposed to be here, gain the most in that class because they learn how to manage themselves and they learn how to interact with others.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one thing I find in like the instruction I do, and I think you touch on it too, is there's never a single solution that works mm-hmm. for every shooter. Some people, you know, have great, you know, control, you know, great, great physiological and physical control to where they can focus on doing things. But then they get, you know, messed up when they move and shoot, you know, try to move around targets and do different things like that. How do you go along and address that, you know, one size doesn't fit all with some of the stuff you cover in the class?
Yeah, I think one of the things we have to realize is instructors that we are EQ managers. We're managing human beings that are primary emotional. You know, we put a lot of emphasis in our culture on IQ, but that's not really what we are. You know, I always make the joke, if somebody thinks they're dispassionate and information driven, all you have to do is argue with them to see if that's true. And they usually get angry and upset. And when we're learning is always difficult. It's a necessity for the brain to have the struggle challenge skill ratio. And it secretes chemicals like adrenaline, which cements learning. A bit of anger is necessary to kick the system up so that it's ready to go. So one of the things we're doing as an instructor is managing the EQ. And sometimes we have people from very different walks of life. A lot of people that come to firearms have already had the violent event in their life, and they don't want it to happen again. So it's post-traumatic event. Some people are just interested in shooting and they find the primitive joy of aiming and shooting at a target or doing a competition to be their thing. And what we see is people become very tense because it's so speed driven. You know, we have such limited time in shooting to make good decisions that they apply tension before they even perform the activity. And that is a prejudgment of the outcome with a solution you don't need. And so as an instructor, I'm managing the EQ, and then I'm also managing the psychological factors. Like, I don't find a lot of people nowadays that, you know, and I teach it at a pretty high level, but most people know how to grip the gun now, and they know how to press the trigger, and they know how to read the sights. But the problem is they don't know when, how soon it should happen, that they have a hard time with perceptual differences between target and front sight focus or red dots. So they're managing a lot of information And the problem for human beings is the information system is very skewed towards intake. So the senses take in 2 or 3 million bits per second, but the consciousness can only process about 150 bits. So we have to get them down to the 2 or 3 things that really matter. So things that I teach in shooting is, how does the shooting look and how does it feel? And get their mind geared towards what's a clear goal in sight's relationship to the target. How does the things move? How do we get this connection? Can I feel the shooting? So I find most new clients usually are visually driven or are kinesthetically driven. So people that tend to have an accuracy first bias tend to be visually driven, and they really overconfirm their decisions before they make it. And they tend to be a bit risk averse. And then people who are impetuous by nature and more speed driven tend to finish the process without clearly seeing the indications of the process go signals. So we're managing a lot of things. How do I deal with the stress? What decisions do I make psychologically? And then, of course, the technical fundamentals with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, to that, a violent confrontation or something along those lines. And as you were talking about the bits of information that are coming into us through our sensory, and then we've got to figure out, okay, do I, don't I, how do I act? It's one thing when it's a paper target, but it's a whole nother one when you are in a life and death situation. And that's where you've got to have enough room in the cognitive stack in order to process it and say, yes, I need to do this, or no, there's another way out of the whole situation.
You make a really good point there too. The psychological rule is the rule of three. The brain can really only handle 3 bits of information at a time, but it needs 3 bits for a pattern. And, as instructors, we often have checklists that are 5, 6, 7, 9 steps long, and those can all be done before it. But then we have to chunk this information together. Like, what is a pre-assault indicators? What am I looking for? What's the pattern recognition? And a lot of this is done on the intuitive level, not the logical level. So mm-hmm. There has to be a great deal of trust. Plus, they need the experience of seeing the pattern over and over again and recognizing the Goldilocks principle of the three. That's too much. That's too little. That's just right. And that rule of three really helps us grow and keep them on task, because it is a daunting responsibility, especially for the self-defender to be by themselves. Now, my good friend Claude Warner has done some pretty good work in this area, and sometimes it's not as extreme a shooting problem, but it can be a very difficult stacking of decisions, of cycling of tools, of understanding what a true go signal is, and just as importantly, what tells me to stop doing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. When to hit the gas and when to hit the brake type mm-hmm. of thing. And when you're in those confrontations and understanding what is the best way of it getting out of the situation. Sometimes that's as simple as running away, and other times it's, you've got to, fight for it, but then you get to fight toward a solution at some point. Nobody ever is going to sit around and wait to see what happens next. If you've done with one situation, you've got to do something to make sure it doesn't turn into a worse situation by their friends or something else happening to you.
And that, it speaks to EQ management, the ability to be a mature emotional adult in a very difficult situation. And the way we do that is we do a little bit of shooting, which is a very small part of actual training, but we can pay attention to how does a person react to stress? How can I mitigate this? Because, I find a lot of people to not be well acquainted with how they're driven, how negative they may be, how much tension, how their preferences are driving them. And, to get a good insight into it gives you control over yourself. And that is the only constant in your fight. Mm-hmm. When they say fights are won and lost in the locker room, it's not because we make a cool speech. It's because we manage these emotional levels. I teach 2 different breathing patterns in class that are very useful for stress-driven shooters that can't seem to get in the right area, because either you're overexcited, you're underexcited, or just about right. You should have a little bit of nervousness before you begin the activity. If you're overexcited, you have to take a deep breath and just sigh, And what that does is release tension, and it addresses the nervous system. But for some people, especially people that are overwhelmed by this task, they become disassociative. So they're not quite present. And we've all seen this in our shooters. They're not 100% there. A double nasal inhale real quick like that tends to wake up the brain. And these are tools that I can hand coaches that can be applied without a whole lot of effort, that yield tremendous results because you're changing the blood pressure, you're changing the nervous system, you're changing the biochemical system, and you're allowing the biology to program itself to be at the highest level. And you're allowing the mind to not worry, but to look and receive information and improve the perception of the event. And if we can do that with our clients, they get successful really quick because it's no longer me doing it, it's them. And they hold themselves responsible, accountable for the outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I echo what you're saying, because I've had many clients from beginner classes, state required CCW classes, to instructor classes that they've been shooting for a long time. They've been mm-hmm. successful, but they get wound up into the moment. You know, the anxiety goes over the top and everything, and they're just not able to perform. And mm-hmm. you've got to know some of these methods, because for whatever reason, us as human beings, we've forgotten or just aren't taught these types of things anymore in school. But it's also a great way to go along, calm yourself down and do things. I've used some of those techniques you described when I know I've gotten a little too excited about things, mm-hmm. and you can feel it. And yep. you learn how to settle yourself down. And, if you can self-coach, if you can self-coach yourself and settle down and be able to perform things better than what you just did, that's a good sign, because then you can help other people when you see the same thing happening to say, okay, try this step, try those steps, and make them or allow them to calm down and perform where they need to be. And that's a big factor when it comes to helping people understand their abilities, because you can't be standing next to them in the middle of a violent mm-hmm. confrontation, but you can give them those tools to know how to prepare, how to make decisions, do all those types of things that we teach, in the classes that we have.
We teach in the course preparatory cueing, and this is something that existed, but this is the way you can program yourself to perform well. And this is not new. It's been around forever. If you've read Lanny Basham, you got bits and pieces of this. But the idea of the preparatory cueing sequence is how people program themselves. And mostly they program themselves for failure, because the mind is fairly negative. It was kind of important when we were primitive. Like, if you heard the bushes move, it was better to assume a bear was there than not, And mm-hmm. we tend to turn that on ourselves, where we're very negative about the outcome. So we tend to visualize everything we don't want to happen. So when I teach preparatory and cueing in this class, the first one is be ready. I have a rule in class that if I ask you if you're ready and you say, I guess so, you're dismissed. You get to go sit down until you are ready. I know it's a joke, but dark humor also hides our true intent. So if I get mm-hmm. the timer out and I say, shooter, are you ready? And they say, I guess so. They're dismissed from the line. It only takes once. And then it sounds like the Marine Corps descended upon the line. But, this readiness that we're going to, and then standing up straight, when the body stands up straight, it's ready for action. Settling the eyes, using Joan Vickers' quiet eye theory of opening the vision, settling the eyes, which warriors have been doing forever. Visualizing what you're going to see and feel. And then taking a deep breath, accepting the program, executing it, and being able to replay it. These are things we've tried to manage in the tactical world with bits and pieces of, pre-fight, post-fight, and during. And this is the programming matrix for the human being. And this works with people extraordinarily well because it allows them to manage themselves. And, that's the hard thing to do. If you've ever been to a force-on-force class and you've watched people talk to each other in stress, it's very difficult to do all these things well. And people really suffer because the large majority of these programs have to be addressed as soon as possible. And we have to build confidence. And we have to realize that we're capable of programming ourselves for success instead of failure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think a lot of the points you've talked about work for firearm instruction, as well as a lot of other sports coaching. Mm-hmm. Go along and think about, the teenagers that are, playing a sport. They have a lot of negative connotations, negative self-image, different things along those lines. At the same time, they've got the abilities, the gifts to play the sport very well. And, you know, the outcome of, you know, most of the sports really isn't up to one person. It's up to the team and up to, you know, whoever their competition is. But if they can get it in their head that, you know, they perform best they can, then they know they've left it all on the field. And, yeah, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed about. And that's where, again, you're speaking about negative thoughts. I've been there. I know what it's like. And it's one of those to where you've got to coach yourself out of it and put your mind where it needs to be and focused on performance, not focused on the result, because you can't change the result, really. Mm-hmm. It's going to be what it's going to be.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a hard thing to do, because we do get focused on the outcome, and then, you know, we don't know how to manage ourselves in the moment. But if you can become process driven, and I'm not spouting everybody should be positive. I want you to make corrections. I just want you to make corrections without emotion. You know, there's no need to beat yourself up or flog yourself while you do it. You just simply say, I need to see the sights. I need to grip the gun better. I need to see the entirety of this event. I need to watch all three of these people. I need to move to a place of better safety or cover before I make a decision on what to do next. And allowing ourselves to do that, it's unfortunate that, you know, that we use the term fight, flight, or freeze, because freezes were very beneficial for once upon a time, because they allowed us to assess the situation. And what happens in a real freeze is you get caught between fight or flight. But if you can do an assessment phase and say, this is the best action, I have 80% success, and then execute as quickly as you can, you get rid of those small voices inside of it. And the neuroscience is startling in this area. You know, I've done a lot of work on flow, and Andrew Huberman's doing a great job with his labs and talking about these things that, you know, giving somebody a clear goal and how to manage it allows them the ability to act at a pretty high level, you know, keep them present, get the immediate feedback loop, and challenge them just enough that it doesn't overcome them.
That's very neat. Well, Brian, if somebody's interested in this class, what do they need? I mean, you said there's a shooting qualification to get in the class. What else do they need?
So, you need to, of course, every coach always says this, but you really need to have an open mind. Most of us have got a patchwork of performance that works okay. It's not exceptional, but it works pretty good most of the time. But what we really examine in this is, you know, there's roughly 270 cognitive biases that interfere with our ability to process information. So I teach people how to speak well in this class and how to present. I teach them how to choose their words, because language is a virus and it affects people with ideas. You also have to be willing to examine your own preferences. You have to learn some psychology. Like, we work on the Pygmalion effect, which is the idea of whatever you expect from somebody is exactly what you tend to get from them. We work on statistical analysis and gathering information, looking at different metrics of scoring. So it's a very different thing. And I don't want it to feel like it's coming from a fire hose. We always say that. And I think that's a modulation effort from the coach if you're overwhelming them. But this is such a unique environment for most people. They've never really heard or seen the things I'm speaking about, because in firearms, modern coaching hasn't really gotten here yet. It's just starting to get here. We're on the third generation of instructors. And we always see this in a martial discipline. There's the founding fathers, and we're grateful to them, and they did a fantastic job. And then there's those that keep up theirs, but they start to grow. And now we're seeing an emerging group of instructors that are gathering new information. John Hearn is a great example of that. He's thinking deeply about what's going on. And there's an emerging group of performance-based, I don't have a better word for it, but the idea of how can we take this to the next level? Because it's a very dangerous time for instructors. The third generation is either make it or break it. And things either get stuck and they don't progress, or they tend to deteriorate. So when you're coming to this class, you're just learning a new way. And it sometimes people feel like it's kind of manipulative, but that's our job. We manipulate people for a positive process. There is a lot of information in it. I hand out all the slides to everybody. So you get all the information, you take it with you. You will coach other people. So, you know, if it's a group of 10, you're going to probably, coach 9 different people in that class. And then you'll actually get some feedback on what you're doing and how it works. We have top coach award, which is voted upon because primarily, even though it's about shooting, it's a coaching class. And, as long as you're sufficient to the task of shooting itself, the rest we can fill in and work on it. And I've had several people say they would take the class immediately again if they could, because it's a very interesting class in its breadth and reach. And I've taken a big bite. I know I have with it, from teaching people to present well and to speak well and to coach well, but it makes your life so easy as an instructor. And I know you feel it. I have a passion to help people. That's why you coach. You're an advocate for success. That's what you want to do. And anything that can help you do better at that, we don't have to talk about, this guy's way or this person's way or this person's way. What we have to do is find the way that works for the human being in front of us. And there's a wide variety of approaches to that. But, you tend to be able to cycle this and get a good chance to work on it. So I would say that, when I say an open mind, you're going to examine a lot about yourself and other people and your perceptions. I unfortunately came from a pretty bad household, so I learned to read people pretty early in my life, and I'm able to look deeply into people and to really observe them. And, I found a niche in this, and then I got to teach, when you're running a martial arts school, you teach all the time. And so I got to really work on these programs. And I think anybody can do this class that's interested and has the requirement. I don't hold as a requirement, but is be able to shoot the test, 10 rounds, 10 yards, 10 seconds. If you can shoot that kind of standard, you'll have no problem with any of the shooting drills in the class.
Yeah, that's sounds very, very reasonable for it. And I think as you talk about, one of the things that popped in my mind is how the next generation, third generation of instructors, coaches, trainers, have got to, step up and realize they've got to be taking, the torch from, the generation in front of us, because I don't care who you name, they're getting older every year. And with that being older every year, I mean, look at John Hearn. I mean, great guy, but he's not getting any younger. And with that, there's got to be the next generation that we pass the information on to, and also the fire to go and ask the question why and see, is there a better way of doing things? Because, I tell people, and Dave Spalding was on one time, and he actually went back to the 1920s and 30s and looked at the, pistol fighting books that they had back then. And he said the only difference between then and now was they shot, Smith and Wesson and Colts back then, and now we've got Glock and M&Ps and H&Ks. And, the tools change, yes, because of, just time, but you got the same situations all the way around, and that's where we've got to take the torch and do better with it. Let's put it that way.
Something we do well in martial arts is the mentorship, the apprentice approach. I've got 5 or 6, I think I'm up to about 10 now, 10 coaches that I've taken under my wing, because that's my job as an elder instructor, is to spend time with them. Inversely, the same thing happened to me. John Farnham was at TACCON. I was teaching a class, and John came in and listened to the class. And then he said, "Hey, Brian, do you mind if I say a couple words?" I told him, "No, you're not allowed to speak in my class." That's not true at all. And I said, "Of course, Mr. Farnham, whatever you'd like to do." And he gave this very eloquent speech, which was, kind of a benediction. Hey, Brian's doing a good job, and I feel safe with him doing this, and he's going to keep our techniques alive, and he's going to help people improve, so you should really pay attention to him. And that's a man who understands leadership. He was leading in the moment. He's giving the blessing to the next instructor, and it's my job to do the same thing, and it's their job to find the next. And, we're seeing a big diversification of classes now with the type students that show up. And it's important that we be able to reach as many different people as we can, because a lot of things that kept shooting alive, I was on a rifle team when I was a kid. You know, those things don't exist for people. Hunting, not as many people are, you know, all these things are kind of dwindling. So we have to have a way for people to enjoy shooting and to get better at it and to create another group of instructors to be present for them. And I was on another podcast and somebody was kind of going on about, you know, these young kids. And I said, it's our fault. We're the leaders. We've abdicated responsibility. And, you know, you don't know what difference you can make with somebody in 5 minutes. I've had my life completely changed by somebody spending time with me and showing me what it meant to be a good person in that moment.
And think about it. 50 years ago, we were that those young kids all over again. I mean, you know, that's just, you know, every generation complains, you know, back to negativity. You know, about the upcoming generation, and everybody's got to kind of be reminded, you know, think about some of the stupid things you did when you were, you know, a kid, when you were a teenager, you know, those types of things. And, you know, maybe you got caught, maybe you didn't get caught for it, but at the same time, translate that over to, you know, what a 14, 15, 16 year old kid's doing now. And you'll be like, yeah, that would be me if, you know, if I was 16 years old right now. But you're not. You're one of the elders, and that's where we've got to go along and show some understanding. Also, you know, pass along some wisdom to them, because it's like, yeah, that's just not the right way of doing things, and that will come back and haunt you, you know, if you do those types of things. And, you know, I think being an elder has that privilege, because you're not exactly their parent, but at the same time, you can go along and say, oh, you should have seen what I did when I was a kid, you know, those kind of things, and they tend to look up to the elders. So, Brian, do you have, I'm just kind of wondering, do you have any example of something that's deliberate coaching that's really helped a coach turn around way he was teaching a class that you can share?
Yeah. You know, this is a fairly recent one, but it's the deep connection that's available in coaching that people often miss. I teach a sequencing of how to make a correction. And you know, we all have our pet corrections that, you know, you should grip the gun better, you should press the trigger well, see your sights. But oftentimes we make a correction that may not be yielding results. So I have one of my coaches that I'm mentoring, and what I had them do was not stand in the place they always stood when they coached. They stood very close. They watched the gun very closely. So I had them step back, and then I had them walk around the person and watch how everything was affecting them. And then formulate a hypothesis of what they thought was going wrong diagnostically, and then use the Socratic method. Ask the person, hey, what did you see when the gun fired? And interestingly enough, if you have a good enough trust with the person, they'll answer it honestly. And oftentimes is they didn't see anything. You know, they got to the moment, they aimed, and they said now, and that's when the whole activity started. So I watched her use this process, and she asked the question, and she drew their attention back to it. And then she asked, hey, how does the gun feel in your hand? And they said, well, I can't feel it. You know, they were over gripping, so therefore they couldn't feel their trigger finger. So she used a little bit of work to get them to feel the connection to the gun. And it was a smaller person. You know, smaller people try to dominate the gun, but Newton said we can't stop recoil. You know, it's going to happen, so we have to accept it. And through a series of observation, you know, it's kind of a cognitive interview theory, they're able to change that moment and that shooter. And then there's that dawning smile that we all see when they realize that, you know, there's only two stages to learning. It's either a struggle or it's easy. And once she had transferred to the easy, she was able to help this person find the way to handle the recoil, to see what it was. But she learned that by changing her perspective and asking questions instead of offering the solution, she was able to affect a bigger change more quickly.
And I think one thing that's really good about doing that for any instructor is you're not going to be there the next time they're shooting. Potentially they're going to be at the range or other places. And if they know how to process things within their own mind, then they've made great progress, because they're able to self-diagnose and say, okay, I've got to do this with my grip or do this with my trigger, you know, lighten my grip on it. Different pieces like that, that, okay, your coach can tell you very quickly to do that. But if they don't take that away, or they don't know to do that when they leave the range, then they've, you know, haven't gotten the full value of your time, because they're going to be doing the same thing when they're practicing by themselves. So great example.
Well, you know, you have two choices. You can build the trust in yourself where they rely on you. But as you've just said, when you're not there, what happens, you know? But what we're really doing is building the trust to rely on themselves. The human brain is a miraculous instrument that's able to sense things. You know, as we talk about in class, there's more senses than the five we were taught. We're up to about 23 senses. You know, weird things like sense of temperature, sense of pressure, sense of hunger. Even weirder, we can tell the difference between water that's running, whether it's hot or cold. So we're this miraculous ability to adapt and to change. And as the coaches, we really have to empower that. And if you're worried about your retention, it'll make it better, because you're advocating for their success. And when they don't need you, then they really decide they do need you, because you get to see the things that they have a hard time seeing. And I've had people take deliberate coaching now three or four times.
Wow.
Which is a high compliment, you know. It's hard to sit through that, and I got PowerPoint, so you know, I'm a pretty good presenter, but it's still a lot of setting. But they feel that, and then as a coach, I can modulate on three levels, you know, and teach in class three different groups of people: that beginner, that intermediate, and that advanced. So it allows to build that trust, and ultimately, as a self defender, we have to, you know, We're not going to be there, and your voice may be in their head. So put the right program in.
Yep. That's a great way of doing it. Well, Brian, we appreciate your time on the podcast today, but we've been asking all our season 7 guests, what do you do for your mental health every day?
Well, I'll tell you, this is a good question. I tend to be very structured because I grew up in a chaotic environment, and I had a lot of struggles in my life. And there were some pretty dark times. The things that I do is I always succeed at one task early in the morning, whether it's get up, make the bed, whether it's get up, lift the weights, whether it's get up, drive, practice. As soon as my eyes open, I am haunted by one of the Stoics saying is not covering under the sheets, and I get going. By taking action, you change your life. The secondary process is to be grateful. And to have a real gratitude practice. I'm an incredibly fortunate human being to find a space to do the thing that I love that makes me feel purposeful and alive. And having gratitude really matters. And then the final thing is I accept whatever challenge comes my way. Human beings are geared towards having challenge in their life. You don't want a stress-free life. You'll simply create stress of your own. So whatever challenge comes my way, I know I'm up to it. If it's a particularly difficult day, I take a little bit of time to breathe deeply, to reflect, to give myself a little bit of space. And this discipline, like your dry practice, is a discipline of self-awareness. And it's always hard to get started. That's the struggle. But once you start your practice, after about 90 days, you create inertia, and then you tend to move forward. And that allows you to change. And I will leave with this final idea is you can't replace a bad habit unless you put something good in its place. And you will struggle very hard to put something positive in the place of a bad habit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's difficult. And that's the nature of it. And it's going to require you to follow up. You know, we used to suggest that people make a public announcement of their intention. And what we found, the neuroscience says that's incorrect, that if you tell people you're going to do something, what happens is the people that care about you say, I know you can do it, and you get a reward. So the reward comes too early. It's better to struggle, and then 90 days after you've successfully done this and you've made a difference, then you can talk about it, because that portion is really important. So embrace the struggle, be grateful, and get up and do something, and be successful as soon as possible. However your life works, do one thing that gets you moving on the path. And that's how I manage my side of it. So
that's good. That's a very good activities to, as I say, keep your head screwed on straight every day, because life is going to throw you curveballs.
It ain't easy, brother.
What you do.
It ain't easy.
Well, Brian, where can people find out more information about your class schedule for the deliberate coaching and more about the Complete Combatant?
So very simple. It's thecompletecombatant.com. And my wife is a wonderful wizard of organization. And we have a great website. Everything's on there. And then we're on everything. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, everywhere you'll find us. And then you can find all our classes on shootingclasses.com and Eventbrite for now. We're moving off that to Shooting Classes. That makes it nice and easy. You don't have to search too hard. So it's just thecompletecombatant.com.
And if anybody wants to see the drills that you'll have to do in the class, you've got a good library out there on YouTube that you can go out there and Google Complete Combatant and see what you've put out there. So that's a great resource, whether you take the class or not.
Yep. And we didn't monetize it, so it should stay out there forever. And basically, I teach everything I teach in my classes on YouTube in 5 minute, 6 minute bits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Well, Brian, again, thank you for your time tonight and for sharing your what your class is about, deliberate coaching. And I'm hoping I can make it to one of these classes because it does really sound great. I've heard it for the last couple of years, and I will make it sooner or later. But
I look forward to training with you, man.
Sounds good, Brian. Thanks a lot for your time.
Appreciate it.
That's a wrap for this episode. And I hope you found the conversation with Brian to be interesting and maybe just look up to see if you can join him for one of his deliberate coaching classes that he's doing across the United States this summer. If you're in search of information to help your business, don't forget to use our website at www.firearmtrainerpodcast.com and use the search feature in the upper right-hand corner. If you have suggestions for me, you can reach out to the website or on the website or by email at ftp@concealedcarry.com. This includes suggestions on guests, topics, or if you just have a question you'd like to converse with me about, that's perfectly fine. Feel free to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, any of those to see what we're doing these days. And don't forget to register for the Guardian Conference coming up in September. Be really good to see everybody out there. And don't forget about our sponsors, the Firearm Trainers Podcast, especially at ftaprotect.com, and check out their instructor insurance. Remember, you established your business to help other people, and that was your first step. Now go along and help yourself by getting FTA coverage so you're protected in case of a unimaginable accident happens during your classes and such. And use promo code FTP10 for 10% off at checkout. We bring this podcast to support the industry, the Second Amendment, and most importantly, every firearm instructor in America that dedicates time and energy into making gun owners more knowledgeable. Stay safe out there, everyone.
Concealed Carry Inc. and ConcealedCarry.com strives to share helpful information and education about gun-related topics, training tips, and other things that may potentially have legal implications for its listeners. The information contained in this podcast is intended in good faith, but it is important to understand that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand laws that apply to them. Nothing in this podcast should be misconstrued as legal advice or counsel.